Tessayin Shvat Tafayin Ches, Tafshinayin Ches, and the 1st of February, 2018. There will be no full moon over the month of February. You realize that?
Well, we had double portion.
That's right. We had two full moons in January as well as in March. So we'll have two blue moons in over the course of 3 months. Very rare. Very rare. Okay. So anyways.
Problem is a blue moon or a white blue moon.
Yeah, it doesn't look any different. You haven't figured out why it's called a blue moon yet. All right. So towards the beginning of this week's parsha, the Verel B'nei Yisrael, Le'mor Isha Ki Tezriya. So speak to B'nei Yisrael, a woman who will conceive. So we quoted from Rashi. Rashi says, Amar Rabbi Simlai, Kishem Shi Yitzira, Social Adam Achar Kol Behema Chayva Ov, Pemaisa Bereshis. Just as the creation of man comes after the creation of all the animals in the creation of the world. So too this parsha, meaning the parsha of man's creation, comes after the parsha of the description of all the animals. Parsha Shemini had to do with the description of all the animals, and now we get up to the description of man. Why does man come second? This is bothering Rashi. Why does man come second? He says, well, he comes second in creation as well. So we discussed on Rishonim Day, the first day, well, okay, why is that? Why is it that man comes before all of those. So hold on a second. So hadahu dechsib zos torasa behema ba'achar kach isha ki tezriya. So that's why it says this is the story of the behemos, and then it talks about the woman who gives birth. Quoting here in the Yalkut Lekach Tov, so he quotes from Rav Yitzchak Salant in the Sefer Be'er Moshe, Be'er Yosef. Rav Yosef. I think his name is Rav Yosef Salant. That's why the Sefer's name is Be'er Yosef. So Mitaritz Sharav Simlai Balagalus Lan Vatam Betumas Ha'adam Vatara. So the Rav Simlai, over the course of this parsha, is actually coming to explain to us the reasoning behind Tuma within a person, as well as his ability to become Tahor, because the whole thing is strange, right? Why should a person be different than the rest of Beruim, rest of the creations, meaning all the different types of animals? So they, in theory, could become Tameh. How do animals become Tameh? They only become Tameh if they're dead. So the velos of those animals are the velos, and there's something called Tumas Nevela, but that's it. There's no way for them to become Tahor. So man A is the only thing that is first Tameh, or Tameh becomes Tahor, and Tahor then becomes Tameh, and can go back and forth. It's also the only thing they actually could become Tameh over the course of his lifetime, which is different than all other animals. So why is man going to be distinct? So he quotes a section from the Zohar. I believe it's Zohar either in Yisro, it's quoted in the Nefesh HaChaim as well, which goes on to quote from the Nefesh HaChaim. So the Nefesh HaChaim in Shar Aleph, Perek Vav, so he quotes from the Zohar, who explains that, well, each person, this is a Perek in Nefesh HaChaim, where it talks about how the unification of people, unification of Kadosh Baruch, unification of mitzvot. The mitzvot represent aspects of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore we do different types of mitzvot, so that brings different parts of Kadosh Baruch Hu into the world. So he starts off by saying that man is actually a collection of the different things that were created before him, that man contains within different aspects of the different animals that already existed. And they're all brought together to create the neshama of a person, as the Zohar here says, "Diyuknu shel Adam zehu diyokan shekolel kol hadiyokanim." That the image of man is a collection of all of the other images that existed from all the other animals that existed, or that connected before. So what is so? So in the little footnote, in the note here, he has hagos. He has notes to his own Nefesh HaChaim. He says that the man was perfect. That was before the chait. That was before the chait of the Adam. Lo yakol as rak mikol alamus v'chokus hakadosh levad. That before the sin, the man only had collected within him all of the different kedushos, all of the different things that were holy. The lo mikol chosra. He didn't have anything from evil, from bad powers that are in the world. Aval achar hachait, after the sin, nichlu v'nisru bo gam kochus hatuma v'ara. Included then within him all of different strengths, not just those of Kedusha. as well as those that are impure as well. So it goes on and says, now we understand a little bit, or perhaps Rav Yosef Salant explains that that's how we understand that man could be Tahor, then he could become Tameh, or then he could be Tameh, and then he become Tahor. He could go back and forth, because all of them, all of these different aspects are represented in man. That's why man could do good, and that's why man could do bad. And that's why even when they're doing good, they could really be doing bad. Or when they're really, even when they're really doing bad, they could possibly really be doing good. I mean, the man is a mixture of all of these things, and it's our job over the course of our existence, over the time of this world, to be able to straighten ourselves up to become as much tahor as possible. Now, there is a problem. Whenever discussing these issues, it's always a little problematic because tuma often gets identified with sin. And tahor is identified with kedusha. It's not really fair, right? there is an idea that tzaddikim don't have tumah, etc., even after they die. But even the greatest tzadkanios, in theory, became tumas nida during her lifetime, unless she didn't. But that's a problem. That's not a. It's not considered. Became a nida. Became the she menstruated, right? That's the assumption. Now, some of our imos, it says that Saraf experienced menstruation once the malacha came and told her she was going to have a child. It could be she didn't have it before, but okay, but she did then. So you always have to be a little careful about going this way. But at least that is what the Nefesh HaChaim says. The Nefesh HaChaim says the fact that man could have both tumah v'tahara is because he is composed of many beings, or the image of many beings that have contained within them aspects of tumah and aspects of Tara. So with that in mind, we could then move on a little bit later in the Parsha, and a little bit later in the Parak, when it discusses the korbanos that a woman brings after the Yemei Tara have gone by, after her days of purity have gone by. So then in order to permit her back to be eating Truma, or to be touching Truma, or other korbanos, it says, so she not only is she obligated to wait those days, and not only is she obligated to go to the mikvah, but she also has to bring korbanos after her Yemei Tara are completed. So what does she have to bring? So in Pasuk Vav it says, Uvimlos Yemei Tara, so at the conclusion of her days of Tara, Levenu Levas, whether it be a boy or a girl, whether it be the again, what is it, the 33 or 40 days in total for a boy, or the 80 days in total for a girl. So Tavi Keves Ben Shnaso Liola, she's going to bring a keves, a calf that's a year as an ola, uven yona utor lechatas. So she's bringing a keves as an ola, a lamb, a calf as a a sheep as an ola, and a bird as a chatas to the opening of the omoy. That's what she's supposed to do, and she brings in front of Hashem and it's a kapara v'tarim kordamen. It's purity from her from the blood. Zos teras hayelaz zachar l'nekeva. That's going to be the teras hayelaz for a boy or a girl. V'im lo timsayada, the pasuk then adds in, but if she can't, by the way, afford this sheep, v'lakcha shtei torim, she brings two torim oshnei b'nei yona, or either two turtle doves or doves, or two doves. Echad liola v'echad l'chatas. One is an ola and one is a chatas. V'chiper aleha ha-kohen v'tahera. And then the kohen is going to bring the kapara for her, and she's going to be tahor. So there is first a general question, is why is it that she's bringing Korban Chatas in the first place? What did she do wrong? What is the sin that she did in order to require her to bring Korban Chatas? Another question that is raised is that there's two sections over the course, two allusions, one clear and one not quite as clear, but also pretty clear, to the idea of Tumas Nida. Now, Tumas Nida doesn't exist until the end of Parsha Shmini. We have about three chapters until we discuss the actual laws of Nida. But yet, in Pasuk Beis, it says, V'tamash v'asimin kimei, she's going to be Tamei for 7 days, like when she's a Nida. Well, how do we even know what a nida is? We haven't been introduced to that yet. And also, it's not such a great question in terms of halacha. I mean, the Torah is not necessarily, it has to be linear like that. Or it doesn't have to say, oh, well, by the way, let's take a step back and let's just talk about what nida is for a minute. But it doesn't have to do that. But it's still a question, meaning it seems to like be talking about this nida issue, like everybody knows exactly what it is, but it hasn't yet been discussed here. Why is it, why does it, and it doesn't have to be. Why don't you say she's tamei? And then by nida, it says she's tamei like she is by yoledes. Why is nida being invoked here? And similar to later on, that she brings these in front of Hashem as a kapar for her, and she's going to be tahor mimakor demeha. She's going to be tahor from the blood that came from her. So again, why is that necessary? Why don't you just say she's tahor at this point? Right? Right, she's tahor mi yoledes. That's really what we're talking about, because she gave birth, and even as we even made an allusion, even if she gave birth and didn't have blood, which is impossible, but it's not as that, but even if she gave birth and didn't have blood, she's still going to be tamei. So it's not really about her being a nida, it's really about her being a yoledes. Right, so why are we invoking the idea of nida here? So Bruce wants to suggest, yes?
It has to do with the loss of functionality of life.
Okay.
In both cases. In other words, when a woman is nida, she can't conceive.
Correct. Well, it's the end of her potential. I mean, the assumption is that her egg has now, she's not going to be able to conceive for that previous one. Right? The egg is no good anymore.
At the moment of its birth,
right,
she also can't conceive. I mean, she's already given birth, so you know that. I've always pointed out that the tame has to do with death.
Right.
With the loss of potential of life.
Right. That is often how it's thought about. Right. That's what tumah is. Tumah has to do with a lack of potential with life. And even a nida, even a yoledes, has an aspect of that. Okay. Good. But even if that be true, why are we mixing the two of them together? That was really my question. Why is nida being mixed with yoledes? Right? They really should be considered different things.
It's telling you that it's not really about the blood, it's about the loss of life, the loss of potential of life.
I don't know. It's a little hard to say that nida is a woman is a tummy nida because of potential lack of life, because of the loss of life. And how do we learn that in from a woman who just gave birth? you have to strain that out a little bit. There's what to work on there. Yeah, you want to say something?
Yeah, it's just kind of strange when you think about it, because had it not been for the ankle. Which, by the way, the woman didn't contribute, and then she wouldn't have all these problems. In other words,
who said anything about the eagle? Not the eagle. We're talking about the sin of Adam and Chava.
Well, no, but they said they reached a state of perfection. They went back to the state of before.
I don't know. It's not pshat. I don't think so. Especially because Hashem told them right after, Shuv lachem li'olechem. You can go back to your tents now. That was before the chet eagle.
I thought with the angle, they reached a level of perfection just like the Adam.
The Chet Egel happens on Shiva Saratam, which is 40 days from
before that.
Yeah. Maybe it's specifically Maimon Har Sinai, but right after Har Sinai is over, Hashem tells Moshe, okay, tell them all to go back home, and the implication there is go home and be with your wives. So if they're being with their wives, assumption is that it's going to be. The regular life cycle is going to continue. So I'm not sure what to do with that. But anyways, the Rashi tells us, and this was quoted here, it's really quoting from the Gemara, that why is it that she brings a korban chatas? So he says, well, because at the time she v'shasha karas leila, the time of the difficulty of birth, nishba, she took may have taken a shvuah shlo tiskak ol debayla. She's never going to be with her husband again because he's the one causing all of these problems. That's part of her thought that afterwards she is being she is having charata on. V'nishba rak mitoch tsar v'yisurin v'lachin hiktima ola. Right, and she only took the shvuah because of the pain and the challenges she was going through. So therefore the ola comes. We'll get back to the, and that's why it mentions Ola before it mentions Chatas. But what's the Gemara there saying? The Gemara is saying the reason that you bring a Chatas is that because she may have taken a Shvuah at some point, never doing this again, and therefore she's sitting there, for we offer a Chatas to account for that potential Shvuah. Now she may not have done it, and even if she did do it, it's clearly only because of the amount of pain she was going through. So therefore Ola is actually mentioned before the Chatas. Why is that odd? So hold that thought. But anyways, that's what the Gemara says. The other idea comes from Rabbeinu L'chaye. Rabbeinu L'chaye there says, now it's interesting that whenever the Gemara is giving a pshat, and Rabbeinu L'chaye is saying, oh, I have a different pshat. Right? Is that okay for a Rishon to to say, oh, well, obviously it is okay, sort of Bechai did it, but why is that okay, right? The Gemara gives a pshat, and I'm going to give a different pshat. Well, in areas of Agarata, that actually is okay. That is permissible. The Ramban does it all the time, that he gives, he quotes a Gemara and says, oh, let me tell you what I think is going on here, right? There's different levels to the Chumash, there's also different levels to understanding pshat in the Torah, and the Gemara is giving you one, and we're okay giving others as well. You're not allowed to do that lahalacha. You're not allowed to disagree with the Gemara according to halacha. Why is that? So that's the class I gave last Saturday night and plan on giving again to TA students during their Shabbaton on Shabbos. So you can check that on YUTorah.com right now. Not the one for Shabbos, but the one from last mostly Shabbos that I gave. But in terms of Agarta, it's permissible. So Rabbeinu Bechai says, oh, I'll tell you what's going on here. Dekai al chait adam harishon. That this whole issue with the Tumas Yoledes and the Korban Chatas, it's all based on the sin of Adam HaRishon and Chava. The Hichnisu Inyan HaTaiva VaHacheshek BaOfen HaLeda, that entered into them the Taiva, the idea of desire, and those kinds of things having to do with birth, meaning the desire for each other. Mashahaya Rak Tvias Kefiro Sa'ilon El Mali Chato BeEitzadas. Right, it was just a regular thing. It wasn't really a taiva for anything bad until the sin of the Eitz Hadas. The Al Kain, therefore, with every birth, Shababa Ofen Shel Taiva, that came by way of this, Tzarech Kapara Shel Chatas, your Kaira Chatas. Right? There is a, even though people are doing a mitzvah and they have a mitzvah of Puravu and they're supposed to do it together, you know, men and women are supposed to be together and all that is appropriate, because there is a small aspect of taiva that is coming there, emanating from the sin of the Eitz Hadas, that's why I bring the Korban Chatas. The Korban Chatas is actually, says Rabbeinu Bechai, it's actually being brought on account not of your sin, but of the sin of Adam Harishon. Efshar Lahavin Masha Kol Leidas Yisrael Maybe Tuma Leisha. Right, that each Leida of Yisrael is being brought, brings about Tuma Leisha, and why? The came to Efshar Lahi Natzal Mixas Taiva. It's impossible to be saved from that small amount of desire that comes via Adam Harishon. Filu Chasid Shiva Chasidim, even the most righteous of the righteous, Efshar Shalu Yitfas Beitav Shel Nachash. Right, they too were impacted with the poison of the snake, and therefore there is a tuma aspect. There is a tuma aspect to the leda. In fact, that's why he adds in this idea of the nida part as well, because nida also emanates from that as well. After gamkin levayer hadichsib, this is coming from the Shemen Hatov Chelik Dalid, kimei nidos tavasa titma, that by way of the nida, that she's becoming tummy by way of this nida, and the Mefarshim ask, what does Hilchos Nida have to do with this? Right? Doesn't it only come at the end of Mitzora? So Ella Dinir Din Ischavin LaHadinemar La BeEitzev Teldi Banim VaHarbi Arbecha Tzvanecha VaHarunecha. It's based on the pasuk from the curse that was given to Chava. What actually was the curse? VaYomer Lo Hashem. Hashem says, no, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong place here. What? Yeah, so it's actually, so it's both. It says the Eva she's El Isha Amar Harbe Arbe Itzvonich VeHironich. I'll greatly increase your suffering and your childbearing. BeEtzav Tel Debanim. In pain shall you bear your children. So what's the suffering and your childbearing? So you suggest one has to do with Tumas Nida and one has to do with Tumas Yoledes. They are really two different things, but both are emanating from the same Chait. Both are emanating from the same sin of Chava having to do with the Eitzah. So that might is another aspect to the Korban Chatas that is being offered. But there is... Yes? Plus?
She brings the Chatas.
She brings the Ola and she brings the Chatas.
What's the purpose of the Ola?
The Ola is I think we assume is a general Thanksgiving offering that is being brought. So we thank Hashem, that's by way of the Ola, and the... And the Chatas is for something else. Now there is a... bit of a problem. And this is brought up in the Gemara Maseches Zvachim Daf Tzadi Amud Aleph. That the Gemara there is discussing Maseches Zvachim that whenever there is an Ola and a Chatas that are brought together, the Chatas is always brought first. That's the assumption that the Gemara has. The Gemara is working off that. You have a Chatas and then you bring the Ola. So the Gemara, of course, raises from our pasuk here, right? That here it says that if she can't Well, unless, here it's, she brings the Ola, if the animal is an Ola, she brings the animal Ola, and then she brings the Chatas. So then the Gemara, then the Pasuk says, but if she can't afford the sheep, so then she brings two birds, one as an Ola and one as a Chatas. Right, generally, it's Echad L'Chatas V'Echad L'Ola. I mean, here it's Echad L'Ola V'Echad L'Chatas. So the Gemara is asking, wait a second, all the Tawi are under the assumption that you always bring a Chatas before the Ola when you're offering two bird offerings, but what about over here? So Tashma, so the Gemara reads in an interesting way. It explains the distinction, but then says it's really not a distinction. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, kol makom shenis chalfa chatas, whenever a chatas is replaced by a bird offering, chatas kodemes. The chatas comes first. The Khan, however, here, ola kodemes. Here, the ola is coming first. So, why is that? So, usually, takes first to the bird offering. Oh, but here, I'm sorry, but here it is the Ola, here the Ola is coming first. And it explains, one is Ola's Kudemis, the Ola, sorry, the Ola takes precedence. Why would that be? So, since, because it's actually a sub, by mentioning the Ola takes precedence, the reason that the bird Ola is substitute for an animal Ola, which itself would have precedence over the accompanying bird Chatas, because the animal is the more prominent offering. So maybe one is because it's replacing a Chatas, is replacing an animal, so therefore that would have precedent. Maybe that. Or kol malkum sheba al chait chat of kodemes. And maybe it's only, when does the chatas come first? When the sin comes as a, when it's becoming, coming because of a sin. But here the implication is not coming because of a sin. So therefore maybe the ola, but kan ola kodemes, but here the ola is coming first, which doesn't have anything to do with the sin. Although, maybe it does, but it doesn't. And lastly, the Gemara says, v'chol malkum sheshnayim ba'im tachas chatas chatas kodemes. And when they're both coming as a replacement for the chatas, so then the chatas comes first. But here, they're not coming as a replacement for a chatas. Here, you're bringing a bird as a chatas anyways, and the other bird is coming as a replacement for the ola. So he suggests, so here, the ola comes first, because the ola is the animal, the ola is more chashuv, and therefore if it was an animal and a bird, the ola would come before the chatas. So when it's two birds, then also the ola should come before the chatas. So it gives reasonings why the ola should come first. But yet, lahalacha, it's wrong. La halacha, the chatas is brought first. So the Gemara's question is, right, why is it that the Gemara seems to be, that should be the case? Why are we not doing it? So the Gemara answers, well, I'm a Rav, the Mikra Hikdima Hakasav. The Pasuk mentions the Ola first, but really the chatas is brought first. Right, the rule holds that chatas is always brought before the Ola, but here the Ola is mentioned first. So what does it mean that the Ola is mentioned first? So that's actually a machlokas, the halacha between Rashi and Tosos. Rashi says it's mentioned first in the pasuk, but really all the other halachos are the same. Chatas comes before Ola when there's two birds. There's nothing left to discuss. Tosos says, no, there is a distinction. There is a distinction in the halacha as well. Normally you are maktish, you sanctify the chatas first, and then the Ola, and then you sanctify the Ola, and you bring the Chatas, and then you bring the Ola. But here, you're going to sanctify the Ola first, and then the Chatas, but you're going to bring the Chatas, and then the Ola. I mean, they both agree that the Ola is brought first before that the Chatas is brought before the Ola. The question, there's a machlokas, if there's a detail in terms of which order you're actually makdish it in. And it's interesting, even though the Gemara kind of gives reasons why this should be different, we l'halacha, it's not different. And those reasons are cast aside. Those reasons are to explain the pshat and the pasuk. But it's not coming to explain the order of what we do. So according to the pasuk, it sounds like the ola comes before the chatas. But lahalacha, the chatas comes before the ola. Right? In practice, the pasuk seems to imply that the Thanksgiving offering, not really Thanksgiving offering, the Ola offering is mentioned, the elevation offering is the way it's translated. Yeah. Right? Is mentioned first, but Lahalacha the Chatas is brought first. So then that, of course, raises the question of why? That's a pretty odd thing to do. Why? What is the Torah gaining by putting in a different order than Lamaisa it is done? Yeah?
Because to tell you that it's not really okay. Actually giving birth is actually, it's a raising up. So they
would
mention that first to give you.
Right. Okay. So the truth is, yes. Right. That it's not really a chet. That could be the answer. So the truth is, in the Shemana Tov, that piece that we just quoted, he actually starts out by quoting this Gemara and says, well, whichever way you hold, you have to, how do you understand that it's a sin, right? And I think that really is what the pshat of the Shemin HaTov is. So it's not really a sin, and therefore it's going to be an exception to the rule. Fine. Although, I'm not sure it fits, because I'm not sure all the chatos are necessarily sin offerings also. Some of them are also along these lines, but okay, we'll go with that. Rabbi Simon here in his Sefer quotes from Rav Tzvi Hirsch Miliska, a Sefer called the Sefer Ach Pri Tavua. And he suggests this idea from Rav Levi Yitzchak Mibardish. There's a famous idea from Levi Yitzchak Mibardish, which I think we've quoted here in the shir before. If you like, go to YU Torah this week. Not only is my shir trending, but also a shir from Rabbi Moshe Tarragon, who is a Rav in, he's one of the Rebbeim in Yeshivas Har Tzion. I got to know him a little bit when I was a senior in high school, and I was being recruited for a different yeshiva, so he was one of the people that I spoke to at length, and I hadn't seen. And then when I was interning in the Riverdale Jewish Center, he came as scholar in residence one Shabbos, so I saw him now 12 years ago. And then, like 2 weeks ago, I was walking into the Masifta, and he was in front talking to Rabbi Steinberg. I didn't even recognize him. Yonah Gross! I'm sorry. Who are you? I'm not telling you. Who am I? Figure it out. So I did figure it out, but I was pretty impressed. Yes. After over a decade. So, anyways, and also I didn't have the Yosef factor because I certainly didn't have a beard back then. Still able to see through. So, anyway, what?
You recognize
you
right away.
Yes, right away. So he has a shir, he has a shir this week about Rav Levi Yitzchak Mibardishev. So those that are interested in those, in that person in our history, so he has an interesting shir on the topic. It is interesting that there are no Barditchever Hasidim. Has anybody ever thought about that? Why are there no Barditchever Hasidim?
Wow.
Right? So there's a few. There's a few people like that. So Rav Levi Yitzchak was one of the real original Ravanim. I didn't figure out the exact line, but he's one of the first three generations. You know, there's the Baal Shem Tov, and then there's the Magen Mezerich / the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, I believe. And then there's the next generation, which includes the Baal HaTanya and Rav Levi Yitzchak and I'm afraid of saying others that may or may not be correct. I believe he's the third generation. So that entire generation doesn't have a Hasidic sect, except for the Baal HaTanya. The Baal HaTanya, of course, comes down to the Lubavitch Hasidim, even though they also kind of went back and forth. So that idea of having Hasidim and having a city that you stuck with really only came about later. These were just original thoughts. You know, they taught their communities, but the idea that we're going to stick with that community, even though it's spread around, didn't catch on until a couple of decades later. So there aren't really any Baditchever Hasidim, but certainly a pretty interesting person. This is actually perhaps a very ideal Rav Levi Yitzchak Dvar Torah, where he explains, and we've quoted this before, why is it that Pesach Hashem calls Pesach Chag Matzos, and we call it Chag Pesach? So what's the answer? Why is it that we call it Pesach, Hashem calls it Chag HaMatzos? So Levi Yitzchak explains because each side, us versus Hashem, right? Each side recognizes the greatness of the other. So we recognize Hashem. Hashem passed over, and therefore we thank Hashem for passing over the Jewish people's houses. What does Hashem thank us for? Hashem thanks us for the matzahs. What does the matzahs represent? Not just the mitzvah of eating matzah, even though that itself would be good, but beyond that also represents the idea of lech teichach rai b'midbar, right? Just enter into the desert. Sure, God, well, we're ready to head right out there with nothing other than the matzahs on our back. So we give Hashem praise for what Hashem did for us, and Hashem gives us praise for what we, Kaviyachol, so to speak, did for Him. So he continues on and says Rav Tzvi Hirsch Miliska, that might be what's going on in this parsha as well. That when we give thanks to Hashem, when you have a ola versus a chatas, so an ola is kind of, so to speak, for Hashem, while the chatas is for us. So when we say over the Dvar Torah, when we say over what we're doing here, we're giving thanks to Hashem. We offer the ola first, and then we offer the chatas. While in terms of what we say, like we're gonna, we mention the ola first before mentioning the chatas, but when we actually bring it, so that's actually for Hashem. So that's actually for us. So we have to bring the chatas first, and then the ola. That is the idea that he suggests, and he actually patterns that out through other a couple of other thoughts as well. Number one is by the Melchemes Midyan. It's a very interesting contradiction. Never noticed this before. But in the beginning, when Bnei Yisrael is about to go off to war with Midyan, so the pasuk says, "Vayver Hashem Moshe more." So far, so good. Pasuk Beis. Nekom nikmas b'nei Yisrael me'isa midyanim. Right, that the b'nei Yisrael must avenge from the midyanim. Achar tiaseif alamecha. Afterwards, you will be gathered into your people. Again, nekom nikmas b'nei Yisrael. B'nei Yisrael must take vengeance against the midyanim. And afterwards, you'll be gathered into your people. It sounds like afterwards you're going to die. I think that's the, that actually might be what's going on here. Okay, but number, then, so vayver Moshe alam le'mor. So Moshe says to the nation, saying, hechatsume ilchem anashim letzva, gather people for the army, the you al Midyan, and we're going to fight against Midyan. Lasseis nekmas Hashem ba Midyan, in order to avenge for Hashem against Midyan. Maybe catch the difference there. Hashem says to Moshe, saying, "Nekom nekmas b'nei Yisrael. B'nei Yisrael must avenge what Midyan did to them." Moshe says to B'nei Yisrael, "Gather everybody together. We're all going to go to work." Well, we're going to go to war because we have to avenge what Midian did to Hashem.
Right.
You caught it?
Yeah. Hashem is saying that avenge for
yourself. Right. And Moshe is saying avenge for Hashem. Right. It's the same thought that we, Moshe talks about what we do for Hashem, while Hashem is talking about what he's going to be doing for us. The same idea. And then he offers one more. Oh gosh, it's late. But one more idea is with regards to Shabbos. So Shabbos is also this. One more within the Rav Levi Yitzchak, by the way, is that what do we say in our tefillin? It says famously, it says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. What is it saying in Hashem's tefillin? Atah Echad v'Shimcha u'Mikam Cha Yisrael Goy Echad V'Aretz. That's what it is. That's what's there. Who is like your nation, Bnei Yisrael, etc. One idea with regards to Shabbos, the that we have an idea that Shabbos is an oath. Shabbos is a sign between us and Hashem. Therefore, Hashem gives us the privilege of only us the privilege of having Shabbos, in that He doesn't permit any of the other nations to the observance of Shabbos. Only we have the gift and ability to do that. On the other hand, what do we do for Hashem? So there is in Medrash that it's here. He doesn't actually quote the source of the Medrash, but there's a pasuk in Yeshaya that describes that the Malachi Asharis kind of complained to Hashem and said, you know, we only have six knafim, we only have six wings, and where's our seventh wing? And Hashem responds by saying, well, you only have six wings for the 6 days of the week when you offer Shira, but I gave the seventh wing to Bnei Yisrael to let Bnei Yisrael offer Shira on Shabbos, which is the reason why Pesukei Dezimra is longer, why Nishmas is longer, and the idea of singing Zmiros exists on Shabbos, doesn't really exist during the week. Actually, that could actually be why we don't sing too many Zmiros on Yontif, right? Zmiros is really a Shabbos thing, not a Yontif thing. So perhaps it's that idea that Hashem gives us the privilege of Shabbos, and we give back to Hashem the idea of extra Zmiros and Tishbachos over the course of Shabbos. Right?